You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 414. Randall's here, and we're going to talk about Notre Dame's big-time victory over Michigan State, 38-18.
Yes, it was actually very surprising. I kind of expected a close game, predicted a three-point win for Notre Dame, but I'm very happy to be wrong on that.
Let's just start off with a few of the things that we got right and that we got wrong, and then we'll have a couple topics that I wanted to discuss, and then we'll go through the different position groups in case we, just to make sure we cover everyone that needs to be mentioned and praised, because there's definitely a lot of praise to go around this week. But I guess before we do that, do you have the winner for the pound of coffee from Main Street Roasters?
Yes, V West 74 predicted 34-17, so he was within. He was actually pretty close on that.
He was off by a total of 5 points on that. And so thank you to Main Street for offering this giveaway for the score prediction winner. And what we do is we create a promo code, and then you can check out on the Main Street website, mainstreetroasters.com, and you can check out for a free pound of coffee. It includes shipping, too, so you don't even have to pay shipping. All right, let's go ahead and get started then. What are some things that we got right that we got wrong? You already mentioned the one, Randall, about this being a close game. I also thought it was going to be a close game. One thing I got right was I did think that Notre Dame would hold Michigan State to 20 or fewer points, which they have done every game so far, every opponent so far this year. So I was right on that, but definitely Notre Dame's offense was able to do a little bit more than I expected. I thought it would.
What was the defense?
Well, it was, yeah, it was both of them. But I thought it would be a very close game, and then eventually Notre Dame would be able to score a touchdown or a couple field goals to end up winning by, I think my prediction was 27 or 28-20.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could have. Well, the turning point was that fumble that was forced by Sean Crawford. I mean, that could have been another touchdown, which would have made it a lot closer and would have maybe changed the game a little bit.
That was when Notre Dame broke the neck of the Spartan.
And here's the thing.
But they start off with a bang on the opening, two series. It started off with a bang, but then you're right. That is when it was over for Michigan State.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's the good thing about Notre Dame. They're actually have that. Last year we said they didn't have the
killer instinct
to finish off an opponent, but they are doing that this year.
They are.
So a lot has changed from a couple weeks ago after the loss to Georgia. Even, you know, the passing, they kind of came out firing on that first drive, and all of a sudden it seemed like everything was right in the world.
Well, let's talk about the passing game a little bit. I think we were all probably a little bit surprised that Notre Dame did come out and throw the ball. I think it was 5 passes in the opening drive, and the only rush, and correct me if I'm wrong, the only rush was when Brandon Wimbush ran it in for the touchdown.
Yeah, because he had a part in every play on that first drive, either throwing it or running it.
And they started off with easy passes, and Michigan State was playing very tight on EQ, but they were giving a big cushion to Chase Claypool, who was starting, and Notre Dame took advantage, hit Claypool twice on that drive, and Cam Smith did a great job of blocking, too, that helped allow for those gains from Claypool.
Yeah, and well, we'll get into a little more when we go through the position, but Brian Kelly, they did script those first 9 plays like for Brandon Wimbush to get those easy throws out there. They wanted to get him comfortable in the pass that he liked, and it obviously worked. So what he has mentioned a week ago or earlier this season is that they needed to do, as coaches, to get Brandon into position to make the plays. And so they did their part, and Brandon did his, and it worked out great.
But I think if the defense would have been playing tight on the field side, which they weren't in that opening drive, I actually didn't watch the game live, but when I was watching it, I rewatched. I had something more important going. It was definitely worth missing watching the football game live. Anyway, on the second series, they were playing much tighter coverage on both wide receivers. And so I do think, I don't think that would, they, I don't think, it was probably a run pass option where if there, or there was probably a check there or something. If the cornerback is giving a good cushion, or if the numbers are there to have to have Cam Smith be the blocker, if there's numbers there to hit Claypool for those little quick screens.
Yeah, and just some stats to kind of show. Well, first of all, Notre Dame has now won two road games in a row, and by a couple touchdowns. It has always been a struggle to go out on the road and beat teams, and so they finally did that in consecutive games, and went into hostile Michigan State stadium with the fans rattling their keys, which seems stupid to me. I'm sure plenty of fans lost their... I wonder how many people lost their keys during the game, you know, just from trying to rattle them, whatever, just drop it. I don't know. Maybe nobody did. But I tweeted something out, and somebody replied, there's going to be a lot of old Honda Civics parked out in the driveway or in the parking lot. So, anyways, the other thing is Notre Dame is still, which the rankings don't matter.
You're but just to, like the AP top 25?
The AP, Notre Dame is now number 22 in the AP. But the coaches' poll definitely doesn't, and this week it shows that the people voting, the assistant coaches' assistants that fill out these papers for them, don't care either, because Florida State is still at 25, I believe, and they've had two losses. And Notre Dame is behind them by 4 points, and they've lost to now number 8 Georgia by 1 point, and they've outscored all their other opponents 136-54. So anyways, it doesn't matter, but it just proves that the coaches' poll doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's pointless.
One other thing, we want to talk, one other thing that I think helped give Notre Dame success in the passing game is that they were keyed in on stopping the run. Later on, they did give some more cushion to Claypool, and Brandon Wimbush did hit him for a couple more short passing gains. But the cornerbacks, they were watching. They had their eyes in the backfield watching to help with the run, and that just helped the passing game then.
Yeah. But Notre Dame proved that, I mean, you can take away the run. And like Brian Kelly said, that the question about Brandon's accuracy should have been answered now.
And the wide receivers played a big part in that too. They were laying out.
Only had one drop the whole game.
EQ laid out. Durham Smythe laid out. They were falling to the ground to make those catches. They were more. It looked like there was more of an emphasis on catching than yards after the catch.
Yeah.
Randall, do you ever remember Notre Dame having a combination of a very solid defense and a very solid offense and not just in one game? I'm saying, because if I look at the first four games, I do think that this offense is good. It's very good, and the defense is very good too. I mean, they're not. I'm not saying they're both top 10. They're not both top 10, but they're very solid units. Whereas in the past, 2012, obviously the defense was incredible, but the offense was average.
Yeah.
Then in 2015, it was the opposite. Very incredible, high, powerful offense, and then just an awful defense.
I think the closest we would come would have been the start of 2014 when they were 6-0.
Do you really want to bring that up?
I didn't want to bring it up, but I'm just saying that's when it seemed like they had a legit defense to go with the offense.
You're right. It did seem like the defense was a really good defense.
Yeah.
And the offense was putting up points, and then it all fell apart.
Here's the thing. Notre Dame is leading in some category, just like the red zone for the offense. They are now leading the nation in for Power 5 teams. They have 17 of 19. Well, they're 19 of 19 in the red zone, and 17 of those have been touchdowns, which is the most highest percentage out of all the Power 5 teams. So that has always been a huge issue, and it seems that every time now we see Notre Dame get into the red zone and they score every time. which is unusual. Then you go over to the defense.
It's unusual, especially because that's been a big criticism of Brian Kelly, too, from his time here at Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's always one thing we talk about in fall camp. What are you going to do to improve the red zone offense? But then some stuff on the defense is...
Now, they need to ask him, what are you going to do to keep this red zone offense working?
Well, like the player, was it one of the players, the coach, they were asked about that, and they said the one thing that's different about that, they're more focused on running the ball.
I think it was Brian Kelly.
So they have changed their focus a little bit, and it's a run first in the red zone. And with these running backs and the offensive line and finally playing like they should, they can get it done. You know, there's always the question, how good are these opponents? But obviously, it's starting to look a lot better.
Well,
just like Boston College, at the end of the third quarter Saturday, Boston College was tied with number 2 Clemson, the defending national champions, at 7 points.
Yeah.
And they wore down just like they did against Notre Dame, and the final score was pretty lopsided. But it took Clemson even longer to pull away from Boston College than it did Notre Dame. And with that, and then look at Georgia. They go in and dominate number 17, Mississippi State. So they're looking like a very legit team.
I mean, they...
So
they
suddenly, things are kind of turning around.
They will probably be playing for the SEC championship game. I mean, they look like the second best... Like, they look like one of the best teams.
Yeah, if they keep playing like this. You know, they do have... They still have that freshman quarterback, first year set, which Notre Dame does too. And it's hard... You know, it is hard to go... undefeated. You will have some of those games where things just don't work out. But, yeah, they're looking like a very legit team. But then on the defensive side of the ball, just some random facts. At halftime, that was the first time that Michigan State has trailed at half by 21 points since they played Alabama in 2011. So I'm still not saying Notre Dame is Alabama. I'm not saying that at all. But they are looking at some of the things. They are doing some of the things that Alabama has done. And off the turnovers, they've forced 9 turnovers and they've scored touchdowns off 8 of those. So, like you said, it's a balanced team. The defense is forcing the turnovers, and the offense is scoring the points off of those turnovers. And that has been the case before. I mean, last year was bad at the end of the year. When the defense finally stepped up in the last couple games of the year, they were getting stops and the offense just couldn't get it done. But it seems that they actually did that, and this was one of Brian Kelly, and this was a very good game for Notre Dame.
And you can tell it in the player interviews. They are talking about how much trust they have in Brandon Wimbush, or the offense, you know, just saying, oh, they always have confidence in the defense getting a stop, or the other way around. And I know other years you would hear, they would always say the right thing.
Yeah.
But because it wasn't true that there were shortcomings in certain areas, they wouldn't ever say it, but there were shortcomings. They're saying pretty much the same things, but now that it's true, I think it just helps that locker room have more confidence, be more excited to play. And it's fun when you're winning, is the bottom line.
Now, before we go any further, we have to talk about Brian Kelly's dance moves in the locker room. seems like everybody enjoyed watching that. And his attempt to... with his dance moves. But
it looked kind of sexual, didn't it?
I wouldn't say that.
Well, it looked like it was attempting to be.
He was just having fun. And he talked about it afterwards, you know, he's with a bunch of guys. They're with young guys all the time, and so sometimes you just got to have some fun with them. And it is good to see him do that. It's not this forced...
It's good for him. It's good for Notre Dame.
It's not this forced fun that we saw on the sideline at the end of last year. You know how they were, like, supposedly celebrating, jumping up and down.
Yeah, after you lose by another one-possession game, it's hard to be excited on the sideline.
But, Brian Kelly was asked if he's been asked to join Dance with the Stars. And he said, no, he hasn't, but his wife has told him he can never turn down a dance when she asks him to dance with her. So I guess he, she got him on that. But he was having fun, and obviously the players are enjoying it too, and they feel comfortable with him because Quentin Nelson goes in there and just picks him up and looks like he's going to squeeze him to death. But you don't just do that to the coach. I mean, I'm guessing a couple years ago from what we've heard, you would not have, the players would not have done that mm-hmm. with Brian Kelly, just because it was almost, it almost seemed like he was hands off to them, just kind of kept at arm's length, you know. There was just something different, but he's having fun. The players are having fun, and he promised them that megaphone trophy, and he got it for them. So,
real quick on the Georgia, they're definitely going to be playing for.
Well, they're in the East.
Right? They're in the East.
Yeah, the East is always bad.
Florida, Kentucky, South Carolina, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Missouri, who might be one of the worst college football teams this season.
So yeah,
they. I don't know. Even know their
it would
schedule
have to
is,
drastically they, go downhill for them yeah. to not be competing for the SEC championship.
Notre Dame did give up a lot of yards, and even Drew Tranquil in the post game, in the post game player interview, he talked about that's one area where he thinks that the defense could have improved on. Michael Birch tweeted out he has his Birchy bits that he likes to. Oh, you know what? I had something else I was going to talk about first, but yeah, let's go back here. About the yardage and watching the game, it could have been close there in the third quarter if Michigan State would have been able to score there instead of the fumble being forced by Crawford and Notre Dame ending up scoring in the ensuing drive. But it was never even close in the second half. Like it was never even a question that this was going to be a close game. And then Michael Birch tweeted out, MSU gained 178 yards, which is 36% of their total offense in the fourth quarter with Notre Dame leading 35-10. So a big chunk of that came. They had two long drives in the fourth quarter.
Well, and that a lot of the backups were playing.
And especially on the second drive. I mean, on the second to last drive, definitely on the first and second down, it was the backups, and then on the third down, it looked like the starters came in. But on the final drive, yes, it was all backups, guys that you don't even see in the depth chart.
Well,
there were a couple anyway.
There was quite a few players. Brian Kelly said out of the 62 players that traveled, 52 of them got on the field.
Wow.
So yeah, they played a lot of guys.
Did Stefferson? Did he travel?
No.
Well, if the unspoken or the assumed four-game suspension, we're at that point.
Where'd you get
now.
The four games?
I just heard it from, it was another podcast. I think it was Drake's Report, I think it was Drake's Report.
Okay.
Podcast.
I haven't heard that. I mean, I still think he's suspended for something. I didn't hear the four games, but.
He wasn't saying, oh, it's definitely a four-game suspension, but he was just, that was the rumor going around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it seems like nobody really knows what's happening with that.
But yeah, as far as the total yardage Notre Dame gave up, actually, let's just do a comparison for both teams.
Well, here's the thing we talked about last week. Elko's defense does give up yards, but they force these turnovers, and that's what makes a difference. They're more of that bend but don't break.
Yeah.
They bend and then they break you.
Passing, Michigan State did pass for 345 yards, two touchdowns, one pick. Notre Dame passed for 173 yards, one touchdown, no pick. Now, Notre Dame was more explosive in the passing game, averaging 8.6. I think that's per attempt, or is that per completion? Wait, let me do some math real quick here. I wish I could do it in my head, but I can't.
It's per attempt.
Yeah. 8.6 per attempt. Michigan State was 6.5 per attempt. And Brandon Wimbush did have a higher quarterback rating than Lewerke, whatever.
Yeah, Henry said.
I think for the fourth straight week, he will have a lower quarterback rating than the opponent. His Wimbush's was 89.7, and Brian, is it Lewerke?
Lewerke.
Lewerke's was 61.7.
Their backup threw one pass.
They did have their backup come in, and he did have almost as high as Brandon Wimbush, 89.4. So Brandon Wimbush had 0.3 of a point better. And then rushing, Notre Dame rushed for 182.
By the way, that's not their backup quarterback. That's their wide receiver. Oh, I think it was on one of the trick plays.
You're right. Notre Dame rushed for 182 yards. Total team averaged 4.6. Michigan State rushed for 151, averaging 4.7. Michigan State did not have any rushing touchdowns. Notre Dame had 3. And then we already mentioned, the passing yards for that. And when we'll get into more details then when we're going through the different positions.
But this is how I've always said the stats should look. 20 pass attempts. The completions could be a little bit. You should be a little bit higher than 14. I would say.
Well, that's 70%.
Well, I know, but I'm saying if you throw in 20 passes, they should only 20 should be passes. Higher. You should have a higher percentage than if you throw 40. Because if you're throwing 40, you probably don't have that many completions. But very balanced. I mean, between the passing and the rushing, I was a little surprised they came out and passed a lot more at the beginning instead of running and getting the run game established. But
and in a lot of the other times,
I don't want to be too picky because it worked.
No, and a lot of the other times when they came out passing, they took huge shots downfield.
Yeah,
but Brandon Wimbush did say he did think it helped getting the passing game going with some of these shorter passes. And obviously, the defense can take those screen passes away if they're playing tight coverage. They can take some of that away. So it's not always that you can just force that those wide receiver screens.
Yeah.
One thing that I did notice, and I'm sure it's been happening the other times too, but you see Brian Kelly, right? I saw Brian Kelly kind of talking to Chip Long a little bit, and I think it was towards the end of the half. And there was either, I forget now if it was a timeout or if the offense was going out on the field. But Brian Kelly was talking a little bit with Chip Long and then kind of patted him, squeezed his arm a little bit, gave him a little love squeeze, confidence squeeze, and let him talk to the offense. And he went back to the sideline doing something else and let Chip Long coach the offense. So it looks like Brian, and I'm sure he has been doing this through the first 3 weeks too, but I didn't really think about it or notice it before, but you see him letting his coordinators do their job.
Yeah.
Do you think that Notre Dame would have came away with the win, Randall, without all the turnovers from Michigan State and some of the dumb penalties that Michigan State did have? One of the dumbest ones was on Notre Dame was on third and short, and Michigan State's either tackle, I think it was their tackle, was offsides, and then Notre Dame, they would not have converted, but because he was offsides, they get 5 free yards and a first down.
Yeah, I think the offense could have still done this. I mean, they scored. It's kind of like Brandon Wimbush said. He was asked to look at it different. Is there more pressure when the defense creates a turnover? And he said they don't even think about that. They just go out and do their thing. And I think this offense could have still outscored them they obviously did, but they could have still done it without those.
I think you're right, but I also think just because Notre Dame did soundly defeat Michigan State 38-18, there were self-inflicted wounds on Michigan State's part, and I do think that Notre Dame isn't 20 points better than Michigan State every week, and they're not going to be 20 points better than USC or some of these other teams coming up. I think they're better, and the defense is playing well and making plays, but at the same time, if Notre Dame doesn't get...
But some of those were for, like...
The fumbles, especially Sean, the fumble, Sean Crawford.
The interception. I mean, that was a play by Notre Dame player. That was not the Michigan State players. That was just Notre Dame making a play.
I do agree.
So it's not just like they were running,
But we don't get. How many turnovers did Notre Dame force against Georgia?
They forced nine turnovers.
There was a couple fumbles, but I think they recovered.
Well, yeah,
just the one fumble and maybe an interception.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get too confident thinking that Notre Dame is going to easily handle everyone else that's on the schedule, because not every team is going to, Notre Dame's not going to be able to force these kind of turnovers against every team.
Here's the difference. They can do this, but this defense is, or the whole team actually, has that killer instinct. They're doing enough. They're taking away the will of the other team. You know what I mean? Like some of the things that they're doing, these fumbles that they're forcing, the interception that they're forcing, and then converting it into a touchdown, they're finally doing what they should be doing and dominate. I mean, exerting their will versus letting the other team kind of dictate what happens in the game. Notre Dame is taking control of the game and making it their game versus just trying to just outplay the other team. Just make a counter move, basically, to what the other team does.
And did you, the officiating just continues to just be awful.
Yeah.
And even the commentators were talking about it and calling out this SEC crew. I mean, not SEC, ACC crew. Well, especially when they double reviewed.
Well, I think the time they double reviewed, I think it was the second time.
It was because of the time. But they should have had that figured out the first time.
Well, I know. But the one good thing was, I don't mind that as much because they were doing it a lot quicker. It didn't take 5 minutes to figure out what happened on the play. They looked at it and they called it right away. I thought it was the quickest that they've responded with a review that I've seen in a long time. Usually it just takes forever and you're like, it's obvious, just make the call. Mm-hmm. And I think they did, and so I can forgive them a little bit for double checking that because they were trying to quickly do it. But there was way too many reviews, unnecessary reviews. And I don't know what, even the one play that Michigan State challenged, I don't know what, why they challenged that.
I don't know why he challenged that either.
Whoever is up in the booth telling the coach, D'Antonio, to review that is, wasn't doing a good job. Yeah.
I did enjoy the Fox crew, and I thought their production was
really... The only thing was they kept saying Brian Wimbush. They said that a couple times. They did better than the ESPN.
They also said Alize Mack was the leading receiver, returning leading receiver or something. But I thought that some of their production stuff was really cool. When they opened up with the halftime commentating crew of Matt Leinart and
whoever it was.
It was before the game, but it was that crew. They were in their studio room talking, and then there's a TV over to the left side, and you can see it's the team in the tunnel. And then as they're kind of finished giving their picks and how they think the game's going to go, the camera goes over on top of that screen, and then it actually seamlessly transitions into where you're actually that's the camera that you're looking at. Them on the field. So they did a couple of things like that was smooth and cool, and it was good. I
thought it was harder to watch the game. It seemed like they were zoomed way out. I thought you seemed like a long ways from the field, but that could be because of Michigan State's camera setup.
I think that is what it is. Yeah. It felt like it was higher than it should have been or normal.
They weren't getting as close, but they did a much better job than ESPN, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
But
all right. Randall, Tony complained about and asked, why doesn't Notre Dame do more, our friend Tony, why doesn't Notre Dame do more hurry up on offense?
You want my opinion on that?
I want your opinion on it, and I have an opinion on it too.
Well, I think in a game like this, it's unnecessary. When you have a lead, they obviously marched down the field, scored in under 2 minutes at the beginning of the game. So you can do that. There's no need to rush it too much and take the chance of somebody not knowing what's going on or make a mistake. So I'm okay with the way it is now because let's get it right. Let's not push these players. We talk about making it too complicated, like the defense last year. Let's keep it simple, and I think you can keep going faster and faster. It's just when the players know what they're doing, they can get out there and do it. To me, it's fast enough. I'm not really concerned about getting it faster.
Because it wasn't. Yeah, we were talking about it, but it wasn't this game. It was either during the Georgia game or maybe in the. Actually, I think it was in the Boston College game.
It's basically you're just trying to get the defense off guard with the hurry up. You should be good enough that you don't need to do that.
Well, and that's where I'm at. I think there's different kinds of hurry up concepts. There's just all the time, every time, hurry up, get to the ball, snap it, no checks, just play it. And then what Notre Dame has been doing, Notre Dame has not been doing that, where they just go for an entire drive.
Yeah.
Or even more than maybe two or maybe more than three or four plays. But they have done it where they have a big gain and they run up to the line of scrimmage and run a play without doing checks. They just go up and just run it. And they did that against Michigan State too. And so I think there's two different ways to kind of look at hurry up. One is, I think, an overall philosophy, and the other one is more a situational, trying to catch the defense off unaware or unprepared, like you were saying.
I'd rather have them good enough that they can get let the defense set up and still beat them. I'd rather do that than having to quickly do it to catch them off guard and taking the chance of screwing up yourself because one guy didn't know what was going on, and that can mess up the whole thing. This team has to play together as a unit. And
wait, the only way you can play fast is, you have to know
everybody
what you're doing.
Has to,
Okay. Solon wrote another article over on the website, irishsportstalk.net, with his thoughts on this game coming out with the Notre Dame coming out with the win over Michigan State. So go ahead and check that out. It's also posted over on our forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. You can join the conversation over there. Irish Don and Solon are always talking over there, talking about upcoming matchups, and Solon does a great job of updating with recruiting and different things happening around Notre Dame football. So that's forums.irishsportstalk.net. It is free. All you need to do is just sign up, and you're behind the Iron Curtain. Okay, I think we're ready to go through the different position groups. Was there anything else, Randall, you had wanted to talk about more big picture stuff?
I would just say I thought Michigan State played kind of dirty on some stuff. The one time, that I don't think it was even mentioned, it looked like one of the defensive players intentionally stepped on a Notre Dame player that was on the ground. He kind of like stepped over him, and instead of like just stepping over him, he kind of stomped on him.
Oh, I missed that.
And I think it wasn't a coincidence.
Yeah, well,
and just some of the
Reggie
hits
Brooks
too.
Has mentioned that, and I've heard it other times too. I think it was when Brian Smith was doing a podcast last year.
Okay, I don't know.
It was a former player. It was the Huddlecast, the Notre Dame one. And I don't think it's going this year, but he talked about how pretty much he has no respect for Michigan State, and they are. And it was a former Notre Dame player. I don't remember who it was, but it was one of the linebackers. And just because they're dirty.
Well, and here's the other thing. It was the targeting call. I'll just mention it now.
The missed targeting call.
Yes, that was not called. Okay. I have a different take than what most people probably don't want to hear. It should have been called because by the rule, it should have been called. But I think the reason it wasn't, I actually think the guy, you know how they run and like try to flip? Sometimes they do a flip to try to get away from the guy. Mm-hmm. You've seen that. And I actually think he was trying to do that. I don't think he was trying to put his head down to hit Brandon Wimbush. I don't think he was. And I'm guessing that's why they didn't do anything. But that doesn't give them a reason. That was targeting. Devin Studd still got called for that a couple years ago. Was it last year? And so, yes, it should have been called. It should have been called, but I honestly don't think it was an intentional targeting hit. I don't think it was a dirty play by the Michigan State player.
I do agree with you. And he did get hit into Brandon Wimbush as well. He got blocked into him.
I think he was trying. You know what I'm talking about? Where he jumps over and they kind of almost flip to get away to try to get further.
Yeah.
Because.
But the one thing that we can all agree on is that Notre Dame always gets screwed on targeting calls.
Oh, I know. There was a couple calls in other football games Saturday that should have been called, and the others that were that shouldn't have been. Somebody got ejected because they had his hand on his helmet or something. That call is
right now. This is the most frustrating thing about college football to me right now is this targeting call.
I think that they should give him a warning. Like, you do it once, it's a personal foul or whatever. You get a 15-yard penalty. The second time you get ejected. This is stupid that they're getting ejected for the first time because most of the time they're questionable, and the players know if they're actually targeting, they're going to get ejected. That's why I don't think they're actually intentionally doing it. And my theory on everything still is, if you think it's too rough and whatever, just take the Torrey Hunter Jr. route and do something else.
Yeah.
But the problem is, once all the NFL players blow all their money, then they sue because they, oh, we got hit in the head too often. Well, yeah, you weren't saying that when you were making your millions. So, anyways, that's my opinion. Moving swiftly
although I agree with you, Randall, but did you read that study that where it showed that 109 out of 110 or 111 former NFL players that are dead because they need to be dead to do the test had the what is it called when they have the head trauma disease?
Okay, so boxers, MMA fighters, they're dead man walking. They're trying to kill each other. They're trying to knock them out.
They're already trying to kill each other.
I agree, the whole thing is a money thing. They're trying.
So you think it's just nothing but
money? Yes, you want to be safe. I do that, but yeah, it's just frustrating. The thing is, everybody's frustrated with the rule. I mean, maybe you agree. There should be some kind of call. You know, there should be a penalty for doing that, but. Just change the rule, do something, come up with a better system, something. I don't know. It's not that complicated.
I'm just a little worried that this is all going to end up affecting, depends what happens with CTE is what it's called, and the NFL. It's going to affect college football at some point too.
I don't know.
So let's at least, this is kind of a downer, but let's at least enjoy it, I guess, while we can. Are you ready to go through the different position groups?
Oh, well, with that call, the broadcast guys kept saying every play is reviewed. Every play is reviewed. So you're telling me that they reviewed that and then they still didn't call it?
I heard them say that too. And maybe it is.
Well, it seemed like they were because everything.
They were reviewing a lot of stuff. Re-reviewing.
But then that wasn't reviewed.
Yeah.
But whatever.
All right, let's go through the different position groups. On offense, let's start with the offensive line. There's still struggles from Kramer and Hainsey. And mostly,
but they're not getting called for penalties. I'll give them that. They're not having their false starts.
Yeah. Mostly in the pass protection is where they're both struggling. And they're doing good things in run blocking.
Yeah. And I'll point this out, give them a little bit of credit. The running backs, including Josh Adams, could do a little more to help them out.
In pass protection?
Yes, because a lot of times when they do come around that right side, I saw it a couple times, the one play for sure, Josh Adams actually there waiting, you know, waiting to block. The left tackle and the guy went right past him, and it was obvious that he was going to get the defense end was going to get around him. But he's standing there trying to find somebody, and he should have jumped over and helped him. And I've seen that it's happened in each game. And so it's not like he was supposed to wait a little bit and then take off. He was actually blocking. Mm-hmm. And so to me, they should be doing more to help. They know it's a weak point, and they should be doing more to help them out.
And as long as Notre Dame is overall a better team, it's fine. But against USC, maybe NC State, Miami, Stanford, against teams like that, one small part can make the whole thing
maybe
fall
NC
apart.
State, but USC and Stanford do not have good defensive lines.
But I'm just saying, a game where it's going to be really close, a sack strip can change the game like we experienced.
I agree, but it was good to see some of those plays. I mean, the one time Mike McGlinchey blocked a guy and sent him flying a couple yards. Quentin Nelson, these guys, I think they're playing more determined. They know that they struggled those first couple games, and maybe that actually has helped them. It came at the expense of a loss to Georgia, but maybe it's going to help them over the long haul.
And then tight ends, Wister I thought looked very, very good, very active in blocking. He had a nice block for Josh Adams where it looked like there was nowhere to go, but then thanks to his block, Josh Adams was able to get about 5 yards on that play.
Even Sam Mustafa run, Deion McIntosh run, he made that block, made it happen. And often you saw guys getting up from the ground after those runs, like the Michigan State players getting up off the ground. So they're finally doing what they're supposed to.
And then probably one of the a big catch anyway on the game was it was a third down, and then Smythe laid out, caught it over the middle of the field, could have been decapitated, but he caught it and got down quick enough so that before he got hit. And that's a pass I don't think Wimbush would have made. He wouldn't have made that against Georgia or Boston College. He was just off a little bit in those games, but I think his confidence is starting to grow. And you saw him make plays, but then you had guys like Smythe that helped him out. I mean, yeah. they also made the play on those passes.
Yeah, and Alizé didn't have a drop.
He didn't. I think he's emerged. I'm no longer worried when he's going out for a route and the ball is headed his direction. I'm no longer, oh, please catch it. I have confidence that he's going to catch it. And he looked really athletic, even on the play, his first catch where if he gained anything, it was just a yard or two. But he stiff-armed a guy and then spun out of another tackle and got back to the line of scrimmage. It was a very athletic play for almost no gain. But you saw something that he was able to do that you're not going to be, that Smythe or Wisher aren't going to be able to do.
Yeah, the one thing I think he needs, still has a little bit of issue trusting his blocks. He wants to make a big play. I think the one time for you to just follow Wisher, or let Wisher make his block, well, I think he could have had a bigger game.
That's what was I'm it, talking that the about, one? Where he kind of went to the outside.
Yeah. If he would just let Wisher make his block, and then he would have gained quite a bit more than he did.
And then he did have another catch where, let me look at his numbers here.
He was 2 of 15.
So I think the first one went for maybe a yard or two, so the second one went for...
He was 2 of 15 with a long of 15.
Okay, so there we go, yeah. And he also had a nice block on Dexter Williams' touchdown run.
Yeah.
All right, anything more from the tight ends, Randall, that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think they're doing... Well, I guess we could point it out now. It would have been on special teams, but... Cole Kmet, I think it was him, was offsides on the one kickoff, which is unusual to have a guy offsides on kickoffs, but he did manage to do it. So
I wondered who it was. I didn't know who the culprit was. Okay, let's talk about the running backs. So Josh Adams led the group with 9 carries, 56 yards, a long of 30. But he didn't play a whole lot in the second half, and then you could see that he was grimacing and was dinged up a little bit. Dexter Williams came in, carried 8 times for 40 yards, had a touchdown, and Deion McIntosh had the most carries, 12 carries for 35 yards, also had one touchdown.
I want to make a comment. I was like, look how quickly the third string running back comes in when he's not named Dexter Williams. But it was a different. They were leading. They had a good lead.
You mean the second string running back?
Well, he would have been third string. Well, when Dexter was third string, we didn't see him. When Deion McIntosh third string, he comes out and has 12 carries. So, a lot of it had to do with because of the game and Josh Adams not playing the second half. Brian Kelly did mention that Josh Adams' ankle was feeling kind of stiff, and they did X-rays at halftime, and it was negative. So. They're good to go, but, you know, they do have to watch. You know, now the question is how much do you play him, you know, if you have a lead? You know, maybe everybody's expecting to dominate against Miami of Ohio.
Yeah.
But I think he should play, but if they get a good lead, you know, let the other guys get some carry.
It'd be great if he's able to let him get out there and play a little bit. But if he's not 100%, then rest him and get him ready for the following week.
But I felt much better. I like the rotation. It was Josh Adams, Dexter Williams. It seems there's more. They switch more when it's those two on the two guys on the field versus Adams and Tony Jones. You know what I mean? Tony Jones is out there a lot, but
he's usually there with one of the other backs. Is what you're saying. Yeah.
And Josh Adams taking all the carries.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just. I think they're handling it good.
Yeah. I think that's just partly what they want Tony Jones to do right now is be. When they do have two backs in the on the field.
But with Dexter, he had that touchdown reception, which was the first touchdown reception in his career. And we saw he did it in the it was the noon goal game.
Yeah.
We saw him catch a touchdown. But this is the first time he's done it in an actual game. And that was a good job by him and by Wimbush. Wimbush having the patience to see to wait till he got open, and then he made a good catch. And the way Dexter runs, like, he's almost off balance. He's running so hard that once he does get hit or gets close to that, I mean, he's just, like, fighting for every inch. So it's just good to see a backup running back put in that much effort.
What I put down is if you have the talent and don't give up, I mean, this is what can happen.
I mean,
he has the talent. He's putting the work in, and now look at it. I mean, he contributed in a big way, and I think that catch is going to help him get on the field even more. I mean, that was huge.
Yeah, and McIntosh, I mean, we didn't expect to see him.
No.
On the field, and he did a good job.
I thought, okay, so he only averaged 2.9 carries, but when before they were in those final two drives where it was clear Notre Dame was just going to run it, and it was easy for Michigan State to stop him for little or even for a loss of yards. Before that, he was making 5-6 yards. He was making decent gains on his carries.
He had a long of 14.
And I thought he looked like he had a pop on his movement. He definitely exploded off the ground when he wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay. I was also surprised with Deion McIntosh that they were able to run. It looked like they ran a lot of different plays with him. They ran the one where I thought about it, where I was kind of surprised. They ran the screen, or not screen. They ran the draw play, where I think that was his longest run.
Okay.
But it wasn't a play that I remembered them playing before this year. And I was just surprised that he would have been the fourth string guy.
Yeah.
But he knew that play and was able to anticipate it and be patient with it and run it well and make a good gain.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the easiest plays for them to do. I don't know.
Maybe that was his favorite play, and they were trying to get him into his comfort zone.
All right, we've got quarterbacks and wide receivers left over. Let's go to the wide receivers, and then we'll talk about Brandon Wimbush. So, to me, it's clear that the wide receiver rotation or lineup is very clear to me. Do you agree?
EQ, Claypool, and Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Which Claypool started outside, and Cam Smith was in the slot, so that was a little bit different. But I agree. They seem to have emerged as the guys. I mean, Cam Smith did he have any catches?
No, he didn't have a catch. I don't know.
But he was doing an impressive job of blocking.
And Brian Kelly mentioned that, you know, that he did a great job of blocking, but that he's not a guy that's just going to block. He wanted to make that clear, too.
Yeah.
Which I think is good, because if that's all he does, then the defense can start to focus on Claypool more, or they can kind of don't have to worry about Smith as much.
Yeah. And Claypool came out, caught the ball right away, had two first downs, like, right away. And I thought he did a great job. And then it's going to be tough. Well, I guess him and EQ both had four receptions. EQ had 61 yards. Claypool had 56. And I think they're going to keep getting better.
We saw in the second half, even in the first half, Boykin was out there, but he was out there more in the second half when more of the backups were playing. Sanders was out there, had a catch for, it's listed as 0 yards, but I'm pretty sure it was negative. I thought it was like a loss of 4 yards on the catch that he made.
Well, that's what the announcer said, but it wasn't 4 yards. I couldn't figure out why they said loss of 4 yards.
I thought he was back 4 yards where he caught it.
No, he was like right on the line. He's basically on the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
So I'm not sure why they said that. It didn't make sense to me.
But then his run was also a net of 0 yards. So.
Yeah.
But he was out there. Yeah. I'm still curious to know what's going to happen if Steverson does come back at some point this season.
He's not going to.
You don't think he's coming back at all this year?
No. I don't.
I just figured if he's not coming back at all this year, then I figured he would have transferred in this fall.
Here's the thing. You transfer, then he has to sit out a year. I mean, maybe
he's... Well, he's sitting out a year now anyway.
I know, but it'd be another year.
Well, no, it wouldn't be another year. It'd just be this year.
No, because he would have had to transfer
early
this summer.
He would have sat out this year, then he could play next year. If he doesn't play this year, he may as well have... If he wouldn't have played this year...
he may as well have had transfer.
Yeah, he may as well have had.
Yeah. But... Whatever.
I'm glad he didn't.
Who knows? We don't know why he... You know, what the reason is he couldn't get on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, if it is just grades or something like that, you know... Alize stuck it out. Maybe that means he is dedicated, even though it doesn't really look like it. But, you know, there might be something there. That's why I just thought he's not interested, because he knows he's not going to play. Not that it's not... He doesn't like football. He doesn't like Notre Dame.
Yeah. Chase Claypool also had an incredible catch on the sideline that, again, is just helping out Brandon Wimbush. They're making tough plays. Yeah. Are you ready to talk about Brandon?
Just a couple more things on EQ. He had the one drop. It was there along the sideline, and Brian Kelly said, you know, he was distracted by whatever. Maybe someone was yelling there in the side. I don't know. Maybe he was already thinking about going upfield. But he had the one drop. And then that end zone, when he was...
Yes, that was
Brandon Wimbush threw it into the end zone. EQ should have still had... He should have known where he was at on the field, and he should have still caught that. He's a big guy.
The pass, the commentator said that, you know, the pass is a little bit late. And, okay, it could have been a little bit early, but it was still...
You can't have it perfect.
It was a good enough pass, and he didn't even have to jump or anything. He could have stayed in bounds if he would have known right where...
When you're 6'5", you should be able to get that.
Where the boundary is... Yeah, he should have been able to stay in bounds and catch that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was on both. Brandon could have made a better pass, but I think EQ should have still been able to stay in bounds and
catch
that.
But it was also a spot where only EQ could get it.
Oh, no.
There was no chance it was going to get picked off.
Yeah.
All right, Brandon Wimbush definitely improved over the last few weeks. I thought he looked okay against Temple, and then definitely not quite as accurate the following weeks after that, but definitely looked more comfortable, more accurate, and it showed.
Yeah, Brian Kelly mentioned that they did tweak his throwing motion a little bit.
But then when Brandon was asked by the two in the post-game interview, he kind of said that...
Here's what he said. He said sometimes you're like, so he basically said that you're distracted, you're thinking about all the other stuff, that you kind of let your throwing motion mechanics kind of get a little loose. And
is this where he mentioned Tebowing?
Yeah. Shoot, where am I at? Where did I write it down now?
I'm guessing that probably comes up a lot when you're talking to your quarterback coach and they use Tim Tebow as an example to not follow when you're throwing the football.
Yeah, he just said he has to stay away from Tebow-ish phase. So obviously, that did mean his mechanics were a little loose. That's what I meant. And Brian Kelly said they adjust a little bit. And so they obviously did. I mean, they would agree. And, you know, it helped. But it helped that he was more comfortable. You know, that they had those first plays, like Brian Kelly said, they had those first 9 plays scripted for him. They wanted something that he was comfortable with making, and obviously the offensive line was protecting him much better, and it made a difference.
And you had mentioned this when we were talking about Dexter Williams' catch, how Brandon was patient, but that's one thing that I wrote down, was that he looked very patient. It didn't look like he was wide-eyed and like a deer in the headlights. It just looked like he was patient, letting it come. And he probably could have thrown it to Dexter earlier, because he was open, but he waited, made sure it was open. And the same thing even to some of the wide receiver screen passes, you'd see him, it looked like it took him a little bit longer to get set and throw it, but when he did throw it, it was on the money, and the wide receiver still had enough time to make a play.
Yeah, I think the first 3 games of the year he would not have made that play, but he would just taken off and run, because that's what he didn't take the time to find the guy in the end zone. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely improving, and I feel safe saying he wouldn't have done that in the first three games.
All right, that's all I've got for offense. You ready to talk about defense?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start up front. Defensive line. It was so good to see Tiasa, Mikeadu Treadway, Ogundaje get in there at the end of the game. And Ogundaje, he looks like he'll be a real player someday.
Yeah, I think his biggest thing was adding the weight, getting to the size that he needed to be. But even from what we saw in the noon goal game, I think he's definitely going to be contributing down the road. Maybe not as much this year, but next couple years.
Yeah, I don't think this year, because you do have you have two really good pass rushers, and then you have Trimbetti, who's a solid pass rusher as well. But definitely next year, a couple years to come, I think he'll be a big contributor. Did Kurt Heinisch, did he play?
No, he didn't. I'm not sure what the deal was, but I don't think he played at all. And Jonathan Bonner actually took some snaps at one technique. So I don't know if what the deal is with Heinisch, if we'll find out more maybe tomorrow's press conference, but it seemed like they were trying to make up for that. But Tungavailoa Amosa actually, he played a lot. And he did play a lot. He's playing good. I mean, that center of the line still gives up some runs. Like, it seems when that one quarterback sneak, it was a quarterback sneak, and Lewarke ended up running for I don't know how far. I forget how long it was, but it seems they come through the center of that line.
But it looked like Coney was on the outside, but he probably should have been inside.
But the line should have been, they should have stopped it. They shouldn't have let it get to Coney on that. It was a quarterback sneak. You only expect to get a yard. Like, yeah, Coney messed up on that, but it was probably because he wasn't expecting to get through the line, period.
It was a 52-yard run.
So sometimes you do see, you know, they did let a guy through the middle a couple times when I don't think they should have. So that's definitely the weak point in the line. But it's impressive. Even though they're not getting the sack numbers necessarily, they're getting pressure on the quarterback and forcing bad throws.
Well, and even, okay, Julian Okoro, he didn't get the sack, but he did force the tackle to hold him, and then there was a holding penalty called. And so even if you're not always able to get the sack, sometimes you can force the offensive line to make a big mistake, and you can put the offense back even further.
Yeah. Well, with Okoro, he was from behind and got tripped up, and he was crawling trying to catch the quarterback, which I think Tillery got the sack then. But he didn't give up. Like, he kept fighting and trying to get to the quarterback any way possible. And these guys they're getting pressure on the quarterback, and they're not wearing down either. They keep doing it the whole game.
Well, and Okoro mostly just comes in on third downs. And you're right. I mean, he does show tremendous effort.
Yeah.
And I loved that play, yeah, where he was knocked down but was still crawling towards the quarterback trying to get to his legs. And did Tillery get the full credit for that sack?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. But even Tillery is giving it his all. We mention every week he's playing lights out. I mean, he's getting double teamed a lot. But
I wonder this
defensive line, we were worried about it. And yeah, they do have their weaknesses, but it looks way more promising than it did 3 weeks ago.
I wonder how many snaps he played with Heinisch not playing.
I agree. I had thought about that. I wanted to see the snap count, you know, how it played out for each player, but I did not see that.
And then Dalen, here he covered another fumble. And he was
dinged up. I love how he jumps on the ball. Like, if there's a loose ball, he's on it.
It looked like he hurt his arm a little bit, but then he was playing after that too, so yeah. I think he's...
Oh, I was good. Worried when... There was a couple times where a Notre Dame player was on the field, and it was a Dalen Hayes. Wasn't Niles Morgan out there one time? It was like, oh, no. But... Hey, this strength, like I've been saying for about 4 years, the strength conditioning was an issue, and then they finally corrected it, and they haven't been having injuries.
It can't just be a coincidence, I don't think. I mean, no. I think this year there probably will be more injuries in the years to come, but
there's always, it's football.
Yeah, there are definitely going to be years with some more and years with fewer, but But I think that definitely the strength and conditioning has helped.
There's always one of the guys, was it, which running back was it? One of them, didn't he tear his ACL and broke his arm on the same play? Mm. Like, anyways.
Is that this year?
Just yesterday.
Oh, man.
So.
Well, I guess maybe that's the best way to get injured. I mean, take a couple.
Do everything at once.
Yeah. Linebackers, Drew Tranquil, continued to look really good. He had a sack. He wasn't tricked by, there was a fake that went to the right and then a screen to the left. And he didn't fall for it, made the play. And that was one thing I noticed. When the backups did come in, it just seemed like they didn't react. There was one screen play where Michigan State did, I don't remember how many yards they got probably, or more than a first down. But that was the one thing. With the starters, they are great at sniffing out and attacking the screen game.
Yeah.
And when you see the backups, they're just not to that level. Part of it is probably they don't have as much confidence. Or, yeah, I haven't seen it as much. But our starters and the rotational starters have been playing phenomenal.
Well, and Drew Tranquil just keeps reminding us how important it is to have a player in the right position. He was not. It was interesting to hear the broadcast. I was like, "Oh, he's good at coverage, you know, because he played safe." Like, no, he was never good at coverage, but you know, it did help. It does help him though that he did play that. So we'll give him that. But just to see him, how he's thriving at this position as a linebacker, where he should have been his whole career.
Do you think he can make it? He could get on an NFL roster? Because before this year, I never would have thought.
Well, here's
that.
A question for you. Technically, we could say he's taking James Onuwalu's position.
Yeah.
James Onuwalu is playing for the Chargers. Who do you think has done more so far this season, Tranquil or Onuwalu? Who would you take?
I would take Drew Tranquil, but how would Onuwalu have done in a
Well,
in an
that's
Elko
a good
defense?
Question. That's a good question.
Because we saw how...
It is a different
how
defense.
How much success Mathias Farley had in a Van Gorder defense. You know, what could he have done in a Elko defense?
Now he's starting for the Colts. So I don't know if the Colts are that bad or...
The Colts are bad. But...
he finally got the right strength and conditioning.
What do you mean?
I'm just... No, never mind. I'm just trying to make a joke.
Greer Martini punched out the ball, the one that Dalen recovered then.
Yeah, he's been playing well.
All
no, him and Coney have been playing. The only thing I have is Niles Morgan isn't playing quite as good. He misses some tackles, lets some guys get past him that I didn't expect him to. So
these other guys do. I would say the other guys are playing better than Niles Morgan is.
Well, I think somebody's no, not necessarily, but we expected more from Niles Morgan. He's not playing up quite to the expectation we had.
I know,
the other guys are playing over our expectations.
Yeah, that's completely true. But I still think that Drew Tranquil and Drew has missed some tackles too. And where there was the one sack.
Even Martini
where he missed a sack, and then Niles got the sack. Was it last week or maybe it was? I think it was last week. Maybe it was against Georgia. I forget.
No,
but,
I'm not gonna say. I'd still rather have Morgan out there than.
Yeah. I'm not saying.
Okay.
Just thought if anything, I think these other guys have played a little bit better than Niles Morgan.
Yeah. Martini got called for that face mask, which is absolutely pathetic. Did you watch? Did you see the replay of that?
No.
He didn't. The guy's head didn't even turn, and basically his hand just slid along the side of the helmet. He never even had a hold of the face mask. It was obviously I think he didn't grab it because he knew it'd be face mask. It wasn't a face mask, but of course they called that.
Well, next time hopefully he'll just grab it.
Yeah, he might as well just yank his head off. But like, was that last week when they tore his helmet off the?
Who? NFL?
No. Notre Dame game was the never mind. I forget. They took the guy's helmet off.
I don't
remember. Down close to the end zone. Anyways, if you're going to have a face mask, I guess make sure you really get his face mask.
And then Jameer Jones was in there. Bilal was in there for a lot of snaps at the end of the game.
DJ Morgan as well, which he usually plays at that rover position when DJ Morgan is in there.
So it's good. These guys clearly aren't starters, but it's good to see them get out there, get some experience.
Yeah.
All right, then the cornerbacks. I mean, Julian Love just like just sets up what this game is going to be with in the opening drive.
That interception, which he said that's how they practiced it. You know, he basically knew what was going to happen. It was perfect. This was actually the first pick six since Trombetti's in 2015. Didn't have any last year, so I didn't realize it had actually been that long. But it was perfect. And, yeah, Love is just playing incredible. You know, he gave up a touchdown, but yeah, he could have – that touchdown he gave up, you know, it almost looked like he'd have timed his jump a little bit better. He could have got it. It looked like his
but it looked like he barely it looked like he barely even jumped.
No, because it was something just seemed off, like the timing part of it. So whatever, but you are they're going to give up touchdowns.
And one thing that has been that is encouraging is that there's been the plays that have been given up, either the long plays or the touchdowns, they've often been either great plays by the offensive player making an incredible catch. I mean, there was one or two against Georgia, and it seems like maybe there's one or two every week where there's just an incredible catch made. Or the cornerback, if he would have turned around, like he would have been there to make a play on it, and they have made a lot of plays on it, but there's still opportunities for them to even make more plays on it.
Yeah, and the other thing I like about Love, that one, it was so close to being another interception, almost like Crawford's last week where he tore the ball away from the receiver. It did hit the ground, but which is fine if you'd have had control. But Crawford did it the other week, and then he did it. These guys are fighting for the ball. They're trying to grab it away from the receivers even as they go down to the ground. And it's obvious, Pam, you can tell that they practiced that it is – they do it over and over, like get this turnover. And so it's good to see them fight for that all the way to the ground.
And obviously Crawford had another forced a fumble and recovered it.
He's just insane. He's what has he played in 5 games now, and he has 5 turnovers or something like that. It's
something like that, yeah.
That fumble, when I saw it happen, I was like, come on. I thought the player just kind of weakly like saying, oh, they got the ball, you know, just hoping it wasn't a touchdown and they're pointing the other way. And then all of a sudden I realized like, no, he actually forced that fumble. But my first reaction was like, oh, guys, you know, they got a touchdown, you know, it's whatever, let them have the touchdown. But that was just there. And I mean, they're still fighting for it. He didn't give up and he made that play. And even when he knocked it out, he dove on the ball. He knocked out and he got the ball.
To me, it looked like there was a lot more of Julian Love and Sean Crawford than there was of Nick Watkins.
Well, Nick Watkins out there, but they weren't really targeting him. So,
but I'm right though, right? Sean Crawford was out there sometimes when it was just two cornerback sets. It was sometimes hard.
I can't tell for sure.
It was hard to tell sometimes, but I thought sometimes they were just in their base defense with just two cornerbacks, and Crawford was clearly out there, but maybe it was three, maybe it was a nickel.
The thing, they're nickel packed with Crawford, Watkins, and Love out there. They're pretty dominating. They've done quite a bit when those three guys have been out there. Watkins was out there. He wasn't targeted as much, which means he had good coverage on his guy. So, the other thing with Crawford, he did get called for pass interference, but like they were saying, it was probably a good smart play by him, because if he wouldn't have interfered, that could have been a long gain. It would have been a lot more than a 15-yard gain. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if he actually thought of that, like, hey, I would get the pass interference, so they don't have a long gain, but it was a good play, and he's just incredible.
Great, great instincts, and
he's a game changer.
Yeah, we've even heard this from back when he was a freshman. You know, he was picking it up. He understood football. He's a really smart football player, and now he finally gets to experience it, and we finally get to watch it.
Yeah.
Safeties, I thought Jalen Elliott probably had his best game of the year. It seemed like he was in on a lot of plays close to the line of scrimmage. I didn't see as much of Studstill until the end of the game. Was that just me not seeing him, or did he not play as much until the end?
No, he did play earlier. He on that one trick play where he was getting pressure on the quarterback, which forced a bad throw. So he was up there. It seems like when he's making plays, it's up by the line of scrimmage.
Studstill.
Yeah.
Well, Jalen Elliott made some up by the line of scrimmage as well.
Yeah. So they've both been playing good. And Coleman, these guys have definitely stepped up. And the nice thing is that these younger guys are getting in reps as well. Like Isaiah Robertson often has a tackle or two, even though he kind of miss him out on the field. But Isaiah Robertson's out there. Jordan Ganmark, Heath. So some of these guys are getting out there and making plays, these young guys. So they need to do that because the depth is pretty thin. You know, you have Elliott, Studstill, and Coleman are playing good, but, you know, if something were to happen to one of them, you know, it could get a little scary. But it's helping them by how the rest of the defense is playing. I mean,
yeah.
There's usually one pass per game where you're like, oh, no, they're going to make it, but then the opposing quarterback makes a bad throw. It's just out of reach, you know. So they do get beat sometimes, but, you know, they do get lucky, but you're going to have that, and they've been playing good.
Also didn't mention this, but Sean Crawford also recovered the onside kick, too.
Oh, yeah. He's just everywhere.
Okay. That's all I've got for the defense. There were a few things that I wanted to mention on special teams. Chris Fink continues to not fair catch when I just wish he would.
That is going to bite him one of these days.
And then Justin Yoon recorded a tackle after a kickoff.
That's sad that he had to record a tackle.
It is, but I don't know. I'm assuming he probably likes that.
Well, that first kickoff, I almost thought that Jonathan Duder had kicked it off because Justin Yoon kicked it out of bounds. And then that was when Cole Kmet had the offside, so that put him up. That gave Michigan State a good start to their drive. So they got to clean up some of that. The kickoffs are a little sketchier than I thought they would be.
Kickoffs are not great. Kickoff returns, I'm still happy with that. CJ Sanders did have one nice return.
Yeah. And on one of the punts, when Fink, he didn't call fair catch, and he got nailed right away. And then somebody got called for an illegal block in the back. I'm not sure who it was. But that's Fink.
Yeah, if he would have called it, then there wouldn't even have been a block in the back.
Yeah.
They're trying to...
You know, I don't know exactly who it was, but if you'd call fair catch, I'm not sure that would have been called the legal block. But they're trying to protect him because he's not calling it. So I don't know. I'm surprised that he's still doing it.
I am too.
I would have thought that
he hasn't dropped one yet, but I'm surprised too.
I would have thought, you know, after he did it the first go in that they were going to say don't do that. But I don't know. Is he so focused on the ball that he doesn't notice the guy's game? But for some reason, there's always guys there. Notre Dame, well, I don't know Michigan if it's the State, style of punt coverage, but...
Michigan State muffed a punt, and that's all that it takes. If there's guys right there, the other team's going to pick it up.
Yeah. And I don't know. I wish I have to dig into it a little more. I just think that they should have Notre Dame should have a little more room to run on their punt returns. At least get a couple yards. They haven't at all this year.
I know, but I think it's harder than
you can't
think.
Tell me that how many teams in a row have the best punters in the country.
How many yards did Georgia return against Notre Dame on punt returns, Randall?
I don't know. Do you have it right there?
I will have it right here.
Well, Notre Dame's good. They have a good punter.
I'm just saying, well, didn't Boston College, or was that a kicker? They had a great kicker.
Yeah, some of the teams have had
great kickers. I think punt returns are tougher than what we often want to assume or think that there is.
I agree. But if you have no chance to return it, just fair catch it. Don't try these. I just have a feeling it's going to come back to bite.
Georgia did have one return of 28 yards.
Yeah. Notre Dame hasn't even had anything close to that.
We had 3 punt returns that night, and we had a long of 1 yard.
An average
of negative 1 yard.
It seems like right at the line of scrimmage, right from the get-go, they're letting guys get past them. It's almost like they're more worried about the trick play. Like,
well, you instantly have
the opposing team running past all the defenders.
Yeah.
So I don't know what. Whatever. As long as they catch the ball, don't make a mistake, fine. But I will start complaining about it more once Fink.
Oh, if there's a drop and there's a turnover, I will be complaining.
Yeah. But anyways, at least we're not complaining about it yet. So.
Well, being 3-1 is so much better than being 2-2. I mean, it totally changes the outlook and expectation of what this season could still be. I mean,
well, I think everybody's mood has changed a little bit because of how Notre Dame's played, how much better Notre Dame's opponents have looked. Yeah. And they're winning on the road in dominating fashion. This is the road that Notre Dame should be taking. They should have been on for a long time, but they're finally doing the right things and heading in the right direction.
And it's kind of amazing to think that one season, the turnaround.
Yeah.
So I think it goes to show partly that they weren't, like, personnel-wise, player-wise, they weren't, I mean, barely anything changed personnel-wise. I mean, yeah. You have some freshmen that are contributing a little bit, but not, you know, they're not all starting. But what I was going to say again, I really would like to know how long has it been, and I know it's only 4 games in, so maybe this season will end up being like 2014 where the second half of the season, it all falls apart and Notre Dame loses several.
Get to your point.
Loses several games. But I don't think that's going to happen. So I would like to know, when was the last time Notre Dame was really a really solid to, or a good to dominant unit on both offense and on defense? Because I don't know when it's been. Before I was watching.
Charlie Weiss always had a good offense, no defense. Then we had a good defense and no offense.
Maybe some of the older listeners can give some thoughts on that if you want to. Okay, that's all I've got. Randall, do you have anything more?
As far as upcoming opponent, Wake Forest, Mike Elko's former team, is 4-0, by the way. So, obviously, he got a good thing started there on the defense. But right now, USC, are they at number 5? So Notre Dame is going to have an opportunity to play a top 10 team, maybe even top 5.
USC is number 5, Miami is number 14, and Stanford.
Georgia is, what, number 7 or 8?
15. Oh, that's when we played them.
Yeah. No, they jumped up. They're number 8 this week.
Okay.
So they lost to the number 8 team by 1 point. And they had opportunities to win that game.
I don't like how ESPN tracks the scoreboard.
There's a lot of things about ESPN I don't like. So,
I don't like how they show the ranking at the time when the game was played.
That's not, I know.
Because you don't even know. I mean, there's no way to know how good Georgia is going to be in week 2.
Yeah.
Or how good, like, Temple could have been ranked. They could have been a top 25 team coming into the season, and they're clearly not.
Yeah.
All right, thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.